Meg's going to tell us her Al-Anon story.
You should have just done the same thing.
I thought about it.
Hi, everybody. I'm Meg. I am what they call a double winner. So I'm a member of Al-Anon and AA. So my stories will kind of intertwine together. I love that you're doing this. You know, when I first got sober, we had a meeting at the Holiday Group, and that was my home group. And they had an Al-Anon meeting that met outside of the AA room. And then once every quarter, we would combine the meetings and hear the Al-Anon speakers. It was such a great thing, because then you get to hear both sides of the story. You know, and they are different, but the same. So I'll tell you my story. I'll try to keep it 100% on Al-Anon, but it probably won't be because... So I was born in a very religious family. Nobody drank. And so I never saw anybody drink. No alcohol in my house. My dad died of alcoholism when I was 11 and took his own life. But my mom was such a great Al-Anon. Nobody ever knew. I never saw him drink. So when that night when he died, and the next morning when she told us that he was, thank you so much, that he had died, this was what I said. I said, well, I need to go tell my brothers because somebody has to do it. Now, she did not say to me, by the way, oh, honey, could you take over for me? She didn't ask me to do that, but I just did it. And the other thing I said to her was, you lied to me, and I'll never trust you again. And that was how my life started, basically. The thing about alcoholism is that because of the stigma, people think they can't tell the truth about it. And so if you're a really good Al-Anon, you can pretty much hide all those things, you know, calling in sick for your husband. Or I will tell you about my biggest Al-Anon slip a little bit later, but it was pretty gruesome. And... you know, I was one of those AAs that said things like, I'm not going to an Al-Anon meeting, those people are sicker than we are, right? That was my attitude. And so when I was 7 years sober, I went to a retreat in California, and I was checking in, and the gal at the table, I said to her, well, how long are you sober? And she said, oh, I'm not sober, I'm in CODA. I was like, oh my God, I am not going to stay here. And I mean, I just had no respect at all because I was surrounded by old timers, and you know how we are. We joke about Al-Anon all the time. I think it's wrong, but we do. And so I was going to leave the retreat, and I met these two women that came in the same time I did, and they wanted to leave too. So we went out to lunch. We decided we were going to give it a chance. We came back to the meeting. We ended up staying and loving the retreat. And it was a retreat full of AAs, Al-Anons, and Overeaters Anonymous. So it was all 12-step programs. We're welcome. It's kind of an amazing retreat. And so I listened to the stories. That was the first Al-Anon meeting that I attended. And I heard a woman named Blanche speak, who was a black belt Al-Anon. And she told her story, and I identified with her, you know, and I was like, oh my God. And so what has happened over the last 35 years has been that as I have stayed sober, I have realized that I probably need Al-Anon maybe more than AA. But because I got sober in AA, I still stay in AA meetings most of the time and go to Al-Anon as well. So I have we go to a meeting. It's called a double winner meeting, in case you're interested. It's AA and Al-Anon, and you're allowed to talk about both, which is kind of the hard thing about Al-Anon, straight Al-Anon, is that they don't want you to talk about AA. And if you're sober, it's hard to do. And so you have to figure out. So we started this meeting 3 years ago during the pandemic, and it's really been a great meeting. So if you're interested, I'll give you the link. It's online. So I'm a caretaker. I always have been. And I was also angry. And so I was angry at my mom and at my life and that everything that happened. And so when I finally got sober, I was able to see all the stuff that had been going on. So I have a child that I put into treatment when she was 14. And when that happened, I got pretty serious about Al-Anon. And what I realized is that there was I tried everything. I nearly killed her. There were things that I tried to get her to see, that I tried to get her to do, that she was just, you know, I was the wrong person. My friend Tom, he always says, pray for the stranger, the one they can hear. I'm not the one that my daughter or my grandchildren can hear. I'm not. And I get that today. So I put her in treatment. And she got sober. She was 14. She got sober. She was in a group. She stayed there for a couple of years. They said to leave her longer because she was so young. So we kind of got sober together. And they made me go to an Al-Anon meeting, a tough love meeting, and an AA meeting every week. And I was like, are you kidding? I don't have time for that, you know. And they said, well, you'll make time or she won't stay. So that was where my journey started, you know. And she was tough. She was me. She had all my defects of character, only bigger. And everything I didn't like about myself, I could see in her. It was so hard. And then I had this other child that was, what she said to me was, you know, Mom, I do everything right, and Courtney gets all the attention. And I was so grateful that she was able to say that to me, because that was absolutely true. You know, I was so concerned about this child. I was so afraid she was going to die. I was so afraid that she wouldn't make it, that my focus was on her, you know. And I have learned over the years that other child or those other children are just as important. And they have to know that you care about them also. And they do get left in the dust. You know, when you have a child that's trying to kill herself at 14, you give them your attention. And it was kind of a crazy time. And I was not as entrenched in Al-Anon as I am today. So I kind of did that. She got sober, then she relapsed. I started going to Al-Anon again, then she got sober, then I quit. Because, you know, why would you go to Al-Anon if you didn't have an active alcoholic in your life, right? Because after all, it's their problem, right? It's not my problem, it's their problem. So then I married this guy who was sober, and that was, and he didn't stay sober. He actually relapsed, and then I saw the disease as it really is. And I remember I was in an Al-Anon meeting, and one of my friends was there, and she was telling this story. And I said, I can't believe he would lie to me. Now I'm 14 years sober. I lied my life away, right? Of course he's going to lie if he's drinking. I can't believe he would lie to me. And she said to me, oh my God. I watched Mike go out to the garage. I watched him get a bottle. I watched him chug the bottle. I watched him put the bottle back. And I came in the house and I said to him, you've been drinking. And he said, you're crazy. I haven't been drinking. And I got it. It was like the light went off. And it was like, that's it. It's that insanity. That's my part of the disease. You know, and the insanity about what happens, Blanche said this, what happens is the kids come upstairs and they go, were you and Mom fighting, were you Mom and Dad fighting last night? And we say, oh no, honey, you must have imagined that. And so what we teach our children is not to trust their guts, that they can't trust what we're saying to them and they can't trust what they think is happening. It's a very dangerous, it's the reason we have Alateen, right? Because we, both sides of this disease, give it to our children. And so I had the privilege of sponsoring an Alateen group for 10 years, actually, with kids that were just like my kids. In fact, some of my kids came and some of my grandchildren came. And it was an incredible experience. If you ever got the opportunity to assist in Alateen, it's amazing. And they taught me so much, not just about myself, but about the disease of Al-Anon and the disease of alcoholism and what it does to your family. You know, the chapter in the big book of the family afterwards has so much great stuff in it. And the Al-Anon book, which, by the way, I left on my kitchen counter. But the stories about what happens to our families are so worth reading. So anyway, I married this guy. He relapsed. I started going to Al-Anon really seriously. And he was in and out and in and out and in and out. And I got crazier and crazier and crazier. And I recognized in that meeting that day, I remember thinking to myself, oh, my God, I am crazier than he is. And it was true. You know, and I had never, ever seen what we do to people. So it's interesting to think back on that time. So my worst Al-Anon slip with my husband was he did not want to go back to work, but I wanted him to go back to work. And so I kept giving him all these jobs to apply for, and he kept not applying for them, right? So I applied for him. Unbelievable. And I thought it was okay. I didn't think anything was wrong with it, you know. And I remember I told my Al-Anon sponsor that, and she just looked at me and went, oh, my hell, Meg, what were you thinking, you know. And it is that insanity that overtakes us as an Al-Anon, right? I mean, it's so easy. I mean, I did this, right? If you would change, I wouldn't have to drink. I'd be fine, right? If you would just... If my kids had softer voices, if they wore bows, if they looked like they fit in, you know, I'd be fine, right? It was always about somebody else. Well, it's the same way in Al-Anon. It's like, if he would stop drinking, I'd be fine. And that's what I would say, you know, as he was drinking, right? The thing that happened was that I went to pick up my 14-year chip, and he was drunk at the meeting. And he was sitting with my kids, and, you know, we have the point where we stop, right? And my kids came up to me after, and they said, you know, I think he's been drinking. And I was furious. And so I just dropped him off at his sponsor's house and said, you know, give me a call when you're done, because I've worked really hard to have a sober life, and I'm not going to give that up, not for you or anybody else. And, he lasted at his, I love his sponsor, but he has dogs and smokes and, you know, crazy stuff like that. And Jim called me 2 days later. He goes, can I come home? And I said, can you get sober? And he was like, I don't know. So he finally put himself in treatment. But what, and we found a meeting, and there, I think it's still going on, but it's an Al-Anon meeting for couples. And it's, again, it's both sides of the disease. So you can talk about AA, and you can talk about Al-Anon in the meeting. You can talk about your part and their part. And it was really wonderful, and it probably saved our marriage at that point. And then we had to learn how to be sober together. So we were only married, when he relapsed, we were only married for a year, not even a year. And I was like, I have ruined my life. And I went to, we were in Minneapolis at the International Convention, and I was with all my friends in AA, and he was drunk on the street, and I started doing this. They would come to get me for dinner, and I would say, you know, I'm not feeling good. I don't think I'll go tonight. Or, you know, I'm not going to go to that meeting tonight. I'm just kind of feeling off. I think I'll just stay home. So there's a knock on my door. They're my friends. They're all standing there. And they said, we know what you're doing, and we're not going to let you do it. And thank God for that, right? Because what I thought was, at 14 years sober, they're all judging me. They all think, how the hell did she marry that guy? Didn't she know what was going on? You know, no. The thing is, if you love someone, you always give them the benefit of the doubt. And then there comes a time when you think they might be drunk, but you just don't want to know anymore. And so you just kind of ignore it, you know, until it shatters your life. And then you can't ignore it anymore. And that's what happened to me at that conference. And so when he got sober, after he went into treatment, we had to learn how to live together sober again. And, of course, you know, I was 14 years sober, so I had all the answers, don't you know? And I was judging his program, and, he was, you know, he would say he was my higher power. It was crazy. We worked it out, but it took a lot. It was a lot of work. It was a lot of work and a lot of Al-Anon. You know, we learn all these Al-Anon sayings. I love these. My favorite Al-Anon saying is, "Oh God, put your arm around my shoulder and your hand over my mouth." That was the one that worked best for me, right? Because I always had an opinion, and it was not helpful for him. Again, I was not the person he could hear. I was not. And I had to learn all those sayings. The other one was, you might be right. So you're in a fight, and you look at the other person, you say, you might be right. The fight's over, right? So I said to my Al-Teens, here's how you end a fight with your parents. They're talking to you, you just look at them and you say, you might be right. And they said, oh, hell no, we're not saying that. Well, that was exactly my opinion of that too, you know. But so we got so good at it that when I would say that, Jim would say, don't you pull that Al-Anon shit on me. You know, it was like, but you know, it's the world of recovery. So I'm kind of a retreat junkie. I go to at least 3 retreats a year. And one's an Al-Anon retreat, and they're all 12-step retreats. And I have learned so much about myself. And most likely I needed Al-Anon long before I found alcohol. That's probably the truth for me. You know, that codependence that I got when my dad died, about being the one that had to take care of it. I'll take care of this, you know. I have no idea where that came from, but it appeared and it stayed. And I can still, when I'm crazy and I'm not doing my work and I'm not participating in Al-Anon, I can still do that stuff. You know, I'll fix it. I'm not the one. I had an experience. I'll just share it with you this weekend where I went to a retreat, and some of you heard Father Tom talk. He his sponsor, Father Terry, was sober for 50 years, and a couple of years ago he got dementia, and he did Al-Anon retreats as well. And he was actually cared for by the Pacific Group, which was his home group in California. And they were there all the time. It was incredible to watch, you know. I see this in AA all the time, and I do see it in Al-Anon. I don't see it quite as much, which I wish I could see more. But they did his laundry, they visited with him, they took him on trips. There was somebody assigned to be with him so he wouldn't wander off. It was incredible to watch. And I was always, I mean, when I see things like that in meetings, I'm like, that's who I want to be. That's the person I want to be. I want to be the one that shows up to help other people, right? Because otherwise, I'm the only one I'm thinking about. And it's boring. And so we drove from Santa Cruz to L.A. to attend his funeral. And he was a Monsignor, so there were like maybe 50 or 75 priests there. And they were all in white, which I guess is the custom. I don't know. And Tom gave the eulogy. The homily. And so if you're Catholic, you know that that's where they talk about the readings that they did. And it was amazing. So I have known Tom for almost my entire sobriety. And he stood up in the church. I've been to Mass with him many times. And he said he was going to connect the two, the relationship and the homily. And he stepped back from the mic and he said, "My name's Tom and I'm an alcoholic." And we were all like, whoa. And then he told his story, the story of his relationship with Terry and the priests that had helped him when he first got sober. It was incredible. And it was pouring rain, everything was flooded, roads were closed, the church was half full. We were kind of surprised by that. But there were 375 people on Zoom watching. That is the effect that a 12-step program can have on your life, you know? And it gives you the life you never thought you could have. It makes you I don't know how this happens. It makes you into the person you always wanted to be. Both AA and Al-Anon. And Al-Anon, you know? Al-Anon, we don't have We have one Alateen meeting in Salt Lake City, Utah, in Salt Lake County, one. And so it's kind of my pet peeve. It's my Al-Anon deal. If you're in Al-Anon, volunteer for Alateen, because those kids really need us. And if you do both programs, volunteer, because it's so important that they have people they can trust and talk to about what happens to them in this disease, you know, because they're affected just like we are. And it's so rewarding to watch these. I still have kids call me and ask me questions. One of them called me the other day, said, I'm going to get my realtor's license. Would you mind if I called you and talked to you about it? And I was like, oh, I absolutely love you to do that, you know. And it was such a compliment, because, not because I'm a great realtor, but because he trusted me so much that he would call me. That's, you know, it's not about success. It's about love and trust. And I get that out of both AA and Al-Anon. There are some amazing people in Al-Anon that work better programs than I do. I always joke about, my Alateens would always say, how do we get chips? And I would say, well, you get a chip. You get the chip from the day you came into Alateen. So when you've been coming to Alateen for a year, we give you a chip. Now in Al-Anon, I don't know how they do it, but what I do know is I would never get one. Because I always have a slip in Al-Anon. Always, you know. And Tom always says to me, oh, Meg, we just pray that you never get the Al-Anon program. Which I understand. Because I am a caretaker, even today. You know, not like I was. I won't try to kill my own child today by doing too much. I won't do those things anymore. But I still like getting people coffee. I like being of service in meetings. I love sponsorship. I love chairing a meeting. I love all that stuff. I even like making coffee. And what it has given me is a life way beyond my wildest dreams. And I had no idea I even wanted it. I mean, when I came in, I was like, I just want to quit drinking. And my sponsor said, clean the ashtrays. And I said, what does that have to do with drinking? And she said, just do it. You know, it's the same thing in Al-Anon. It's like, how do I become a part of AA or Al-Anon? Clean the ashtrays. Set up the chairs. Volunteer to share. Share your solution to someone's problem. Make time for people. Make them know how you care about them. You know I'm not going to talk for an hour, don't you? I'm so sorry, you guys. Like, my Al-Anon story is a lot shorter than my AA story. But belonging, there's a difference between inclusion, which I think AA does really well. We are really inclusive. And belonging, there's a difference. Belonging means you feel a part of, in the middle of, the same as, not better than, not less than, equal to. You know, inclusion means that you, when you walk in the meeting, you feel okay. You feel like you belong. But you may not belong, you know. And so it's like at this point in my sobriety and in my recovery, it's more about service than it ever has been for me. And, you know, I go to more meetings today because of the pandemic, more meetings today than I did when I first got sober. Because I can sign on to a meeting anytime. I spoke at a meeting in Scotland the other day, which was incredible. Except you can't understand one word they say, nothing. But it was, you know, I was like, oh my God, and then I gave my Al-Anon talk in Rome, and it was an English-speaking meeting in Rome. My gosh, you know, what must Bill and Lois be thinking about what has happened to AA and Al-Anon in this lifetime of ours, you know, with Zoom and... Lois was really involved in Alateen. Alateen was kind of her gift. Children were so important to her, and the recovery of children were so important. And so when I was reading about the history of AA and Al-Anon, you know, in the beginning they met together. There was no Al-Anon. They came in together, and they stayed together, and they were even shared at the same meeting. When I came into AA, if we had a meeting that was combined, they called it Black Friday. When the Al-Anons could come to the AA meeting. You know, I don't know what happened between that time, but it just kind of cracks me up because Al-Anon uses our steps. They use our book. They use everything Bill and Bob gave us. But they don't want us to participate, you know. And AA is the same way. We don't want them to participate, right? It's crazy because the disease affects everyone. The ripple effect of sobriety is incredible. And the ripple effect of alcoholism is incredible as well. And affects so many people. Do you have your Al-Anon book?
I do
on the car. Oh, will you? I want to read something. I'd love that. How it works, yeah. The thing that Al-Anon gave me with my daughter, and now, so just in case you think I don't qualify for Al-Anon anymore, just let me tell you that I have 5 grandchildren that have DUIs. And they do not want to hear from me about AA and how AA saved my life. They don't want to hear it. So I am like, oh my hell, how do I give them the message of what my life has become? Well, I don't. You do. You give them the message for me. Thank you so much. You give them the message for me because they aren't going to hear it from me. I'm not the one they can hear. If I can find this without my underlined book. Let's say that. Well, or not. So there's a line in here about none of us came into Al-Anon because our life was going the way we thought it was intended to go. And it's about the grief of realizing that your life is not going to be what you thought it was. That all of your dreams, I'm not going to be able to find it fast enough, but all of your dreams that you thought were going to come true because you married this wonderful guy that you were madly in love with, you know, and he or she becomes an alcoholic. And then what happens to the Al-Anon is that Al-Anon begins to grieve the life they thought they'd have. And grief is tough under the best of circumstances. So you've got one person grieving the loss of their life and an alcoholic who, by the way, wants an Academy Award for 30 days sober, you know, and she or he is saying, you got sober for them, but you couldn't get sober for me. You know, it is a vicious disease. And it will kill you as in Al-Anon just like it will kill you in AA. In fact, one of the women that I go to Al-Anon meetings with in Salt Lake, beautiful woman. I went to meetings with her for probably 10 years. She was always sharing about this grandchild that she had that lived with her, and she was afraid to throw him out because he just could not stay sober. He had a psychotic break, and he killed her. And we oftentimes think that won't happen to us, but it can. Just like we can drive our car off a cliff, or we can pay the rent one more month for a child who can't get a job. You know, there's no end to what this disease does. And I wish there was a better way to get our children to. So in Alateen, I would say things like this. Okay, let me get this straight. You're coming to Alateen. Your mother or father is a drunk. You're here trying to figure out why you're having the problems you're having. And you're drinking and getting arrested. What part of that makes sense to you? You know, there they are. They've learned from us. And they know everything, by the way. If you think you're hiding it from them, they would tell me, like, oh, my mom puts it in her Windex bottle, you know, and just sprays it when she needs a drink. You know, I had never heard of that. There was a guy in my home group in Holiday, he put it in his windshield wipers, and then he would just go out and try to clean his windshield and spray it into his mouth. Oh, for God's sakes. I mean, who would do that? We would, right? We would do that. Well, Al-Anon's no different, right? We do the same things in Al-Anon. We contribute to the delinquency of our children, just like, you know, I paid, now, I'm going to tell on myself. I did pay my granddaughter's rent this month. And I didn't, I actually talked a long time to my Al-Anon sponsor about it, but she had, she grew up in an alcoholic house that was crazy. And she moved in with us when she was 13, and her life has been hard, really hard, right? And so she lost, she's in a profession that she hasn't made any money for a couple months. She will make money, but she hasn't. So she came to me, and I have a hard time saying no, even though I know I should say no. I know that I shouldn't do it. But see, it's just a, it's progression. It's progress, not perfection, right? And I'm going to make mistakes. We're all going to make mistakes. And the only grace, which there's so much grace in the 12 steps, but the grace is that I can be forgiven for that, and hopefully she'll survive and find her way into this program. I can't come to a meeting like this and see all of you and not know that miracles happen, you know, because here we are. It's Saturday night. It's past my bedtime, but it's Saturday night. We're sitting in a clubhouse in Provo, Utah, and we're all sober, working a program, and we all have lives that if we don't deserve. They're given to us. We didn't do something wonderful to get them, you know. Terry, the guy I was telling you about the funeral, he always used to say, there's good news and there's bad news. The good news is God loves everyone. God loves you. The bad news is God loves everyone the same way. And isn't that simple, right? That's why we're here. Love and service is our code, I think the big book says. And we get to show up and we get to participate. We get to be of service for other people. We get to volunteer to do Alateen groups, which I know you're all going to run up here after and get information for about doing it. But it's so important. It's so important. So I think I'm done. Because I don't talk for an hour ever. So thank you, but will you guys talk? Thank you so much.